the multiplex podcast.
Jaws, The Revenge. Lorraine Gary, Michael Caine, the most frightening Jaws of all.
Starts Friday at theaters and drive-ins throughout Sacramento, Stockton, and Modesto.
You think of anyone who doesn't see this movie?
Big mistake.
Got a new VCR? Then you need the 1990 edition of Roger Ebert's movie Home Companion.
Actually, this movie is just more leftover recycled garbage from the last four times around.
Hamburger, the motion picture. It's funny enough to eat.
I did go to see it in a real movie theater in Michigan with several hundred people, and they sat through the entire movie. They were there to have a good time. There was one laugh. One laugh in 2 hours.
A big g'day from Melbourne, Australia. My name is Cameron Parry, and welcome to the inaugural Before the Multiplex podcast. So I just wanted to say thank you very, very much to everybody out there giving the podcast a try for the first time. I guess that's everybody, considering it's the first one. So before we get started, I just wanted to talk a little bit about me and the podcast in general, what you're going to be in for. I'm a 40-year-old guy from the Melbourne suburbs, so... a lot of my formative film-going years were spent in the 1980s, so I was looking to do a podcast, I guess, based on older films. So each week we're going to be looking back at the top 10 at the box office from years past from the corresponding week. So this week we're covering December 9th to 11th, 1983. So I was, let me see, let's do the math here, I was 10 years old, so... hopefully during the course of not only this week but the weeks to come, we're going to have a lot of fun discussing older films and when they can be dug up, old trailers and reviews and that kind of thing. So growing up, look, I had access to video stores and all that kind of stuff. My dad fortunately made the correct decision VCR wise to go with VHS. So there were no beta problems or anything like that when they went out of business. So, but there were no suburban theatres really, or not as we know them anyway. So the trip to the movies was always meant a trip to the city. Hence the name before the multiplex. So that's what. That's what the podcast is going to be about. Now, I certainly don't claim to be any kind of film expert or anything like that. So a lot of the chat's going to be based around my personal memories at the time, as well as, you know, the types of films that were popular around that time and that kind of thing. So just to sort of end the opening manifesto, if you like, of Before the Multiplex, I do really just consider this my hobby. This is probably as bad as the podcast is going to sound, and all that kind of thing. But famous last words. I won't be asking you guys for, you know, for donations or, you know, contributions via Kickstarter or anything like this. This is really just a test run, a series of podcasts to see if we are having any interest out there. So with any luck, you guys will enjoy it, despite its obvious technical flaws. Okay, let me see. So. Again, before we get started, I just wanted to mention some of my favorite podcasts that I listen to each week or fortnightly or however often they come out. Just wanted to mention Outside the Cinema. That's one that I enjoy. The Horror Etc. podcast as well. And probably my favorite podcast of all would be the guys who do the Hysteria Continues. So they would be the three that I most listen to. Just wanted to plug the guys from the Hysteria Continues again. If you guys haven't heard them, it's a fantastic sort of 80s based. Well, not really 80s based. It's a horror subgenre slasher film podcast. The guys are really, really informative. So if you have any kind of inkling of interest in that kind of thing, you got four really, really good, knowledgeable podcasters there, a great sounding production, I would really, really highly recommend those guys. So If you Google the Hysteria Continues, you should be able to find where to download them. And yeah, that would definitely be one I'd highly recommend. So. Okay, so on with the show. As I mentioned previously, we're going to be covering December 9th to 11th, 1983. The three films that covered, opened this weekend were Sudden Impact, Clint Eastwood, I think it's the fourth entry in the Dirty Harry series, as well as Scarface, the Brian De Palma film, you know, the whole, say hello to my little friend and all that kind of thing, as well as Christine, the Stephen King, John Carpenter adaptation of the Stephen King books. So those were the three that that came out during that weekend. Now, which one came out on top? I guess we shall find out soon, but as with any countdown, we must begin with the top 10, that being number 10, and number 10 was All the Right Moves, with Tom Cruise, Leah Thompson, and in his signature role as the football coach, Craig T. Nelson. So before we start to get into before we start to have a chat about that one, let's play the trailer to All the Right Moves.
You guys are going to go on in your lives, you're going to achieve some great successes, and I hope and pray you do. But no matter what the future's going to bring, there's seldom going to be a moment like tonight when you hold it all in your hands.
Together! And that's how we're going to win this game! We're going to win it together! We're going to win together! Come on now!
Tom Cruise is Stepan Georgevich, a kid whose dreams are bigger than the town he lives in.
What are you looking for, Steph?
Looking to trade football for an education and still be able to walk.
I hate football. I just like to watch number 33 run around in those tight black pants.
His future depends on getting out.
I mean, now you can't even get a job in that damn mill.
You mean that mill over there where your father works? Where your brother works?
Where my brother was laid off.
You too good for us or something?
No, sir. I just want to go to college.
But the odds are against him.
Now you do it my way or it's a highway, Georgevich.
I want to see some film on Riley, Georgevich, and Oliver.
Georgevich and I gotta take a pass on it.
Why? That kid's real tough.
No, he's got an attitude problem, sure.
He's a kid, and he wants to go to college and be something.
What's wrong with you, son? You bite! You dig!
And your husband's stopping you.
Well, where are you going?
On the bus.
Now, this is the wrong bus, son. This is for players. You ride back with the cheerleaders.
You know, if he leaves here, you'll probably lose him.
Any quitters here?
No, no, sir!
Didn't hear you.
No, sir!
You cost us the game.
You quit.
We didn't quit. You quit.
In everyone's life, there comes a moment when you gotta make your move.
Look, we're getting out of here, Brian.
And fight back. For Stepan Georgevich, that moment is now.
Together. Together, together. Scholarship here, no scholarship there. He goes, he stays. Who gave you that power? You're just a high school football coach.
This is a story of courage. Of love. Yeah! Of all the right moves. Tom Cruise, All the Right Moves.
And that was the trailer for All the Right Moves. Now, I didn't see this, obviously, theatrically. This wasn't the type of movie that my parents would have taken me to see as a 10-year-old, but I did manage to see it on VHS pretty early on. It was good. Always been jealous of that kind of American football thing. We're heavily into football here in Melbourne, but it's not the type of thing that translates to a high school kind of thing where entire sort of, you know, like small towns get wrapped up in it and all that kind of stuff. So it's always been an interesting phenomenon to have a look at from the inside out. The cast, Tom Cruise, obviously, the consummate, you know, high school kind of football player that wants to get out of the small town that only has the one mill in town, sort of closing down. It was a theme of those kind of early 80s movies. I can think of a couple of others, My Bloody Valentine and Reckless as well, the one with Aidan Quinn and Daryl Hannah, where, you know, there's one sort of mill in town that's sort of employing everybody, and it's sort of going under, and there's always that one kind of rebellious kid that's looking to get out one way or another, and in this case it's Tom Cruise looking to get out via the football scholarship, and his coach, Craig T. Nelson, in pretty much his signature role. He obviously went on to star as a TV coach for on a show I think it was actually called Coach for years and years. So I mean, outside Poltergeist, I'll always know him as the football coach from All the Right Moves. And look, I'd be remiss in not mentioning Lea Thompson, obviously, and her terrific perky breasts. They were terrific, really good, and they even had the outside shot which actually confirmed that it actually was her tits, because it was a close-up initially. It was like, body double possibly, but no, we got the shot there that had the confirmation, so that was terrific. So number 10, as we were saying before, was All the Right Moves. After 8 weeks, it had done 16 million back in 1983. So, look, we're looking at probably double and a bit, if you know what I mean. We'll call it double and a half. I haven't done the exact math, but around double and a half now. So, quite a sizable hit, and it added 2002 to that total. So. At number 10, All the Right Moves. Okay, number 9 was The Smurfs and the Magic Flute. I got literally no idea what this was, or what this is. I didn't see it as a kid or anything like that. So, here's a trailer of The Smurfs and the Magic Flute. Hopefully all will be revealed via this trailer I've dug up. Okay, here we go.
Hey, Smurfs! John and William are here! John! John and William! They're here! We must Smurf after Papa Smurf.
What's all this fuss about? Hey, hey, ho, ho, ho! Be calm, be calm! Let's go to greet them.
Here's Papa Smurf. He's the great Smurf.
Well, if that's the great Smurf, then I must be the mighty William.
Shh! You are both most welcome here.
Good day, Papa Smurf. We have come to ask you...
Where to find the soap and stick Smurf? Can ask him. Can you send us a bag of annoyed pink who still has it?
Ho, ho, be quiet. Go smurfing somewhere else. They really are too much. Just because they're 100 years old, they think they're grown up.
100?
In that case, you. How old are you?
Okay, so I wasn't able to dig up a trailer as such, but I was able to find some dialogue there, and it sounded like even as a kid I dodged a bullet. Oh dear, that sounded painful. So I'm glad that the Smurfs and the Magic Flute was not part of my childhood psyche. I think after 10 weeks it had taken in $5 million, so... It was one of those sort of stayers, obviously, and for that weekend in particular, it added another 631,000 odd to its collection. So, it was obviously resonating to a certain degree with kids back then. So, more power to the Smurfs. I haven't seen any of the new ones either, and I'm obviously far too old for that demographic now. So, I guess the Smurfs outside, the vague memories of a fairly horrible ice cream back in the day. It was blue dye, through the ice cream. The Smurfs left no indelible impression on me whatsoever. So let's move on to number 8, which is Sean Connery's return to the role as James Bond for the first time in 12 years. IMDb tells me. In Never Say Never Again, and I'm pretty sure for this one I do have I do have a TV trailer, so here we go.
Sean Connery is James Bond in Never Say Never Again. Sean Connery does it all in Never Say Never Again. Rated PG. Starts Friday, October 7th. Check newspaper for theater.
So there we go. That was the trailer for Never Say Never Again. And on top of everything else, you gotta fucking love the music over the top. Fantastic. The sort of disco-esque kind of. Obviously, they hadn't shaken it off since the 70s, even by 1983. So yeah, one I saw on video again. Wasn't taken to a theatre for that one. The theatre visits being fairly rare, so Never Say Never Again was seen. It kind of been too far after we actually came out. I remember it being fairly new by the time I actually saw it. But you know, as a kid, maybe it was a little, you know, short on action in comparison to something like, you know, First Blood or something like that. But you know, I don't remember liking it as much as Octopussy, which actually came out the same year with Roger Moore, which seemed you know, a little cooler, a little more action and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, maybe like just didn't appreciate that Sean Connery was coming back to the role after such a long time, because as a kid you didn't know that kind of stuff. Yeah, it was just a new James Bond film that everyone seemed relatively excited about. So and back in the day, obviously, you just you know, you tended to rent everything. So yeah, you know, not a lot of memories considering you know, about this film. I mean, despite the fact I probably saw it 5 or 6 times on video. And I'm sure if I, because I haven't seen it subsequently, so I'm sure if I saw it again, maybe it'd have some sort of nostalgic appeal. But you know, if I was, you know, I'm not a huge James Bond person anyway, really. So if I was to pick one to watch, even from the 80s, I'd probably go with something like A View to a Kill or The Living Daylights or something like that, rather than you know, go back to Never Say Never Again. I'd probably watch Octopussy over it, really. And considering those two films came out both in 1983, it was sort of considered back in the day a sort of, you know, battle of the Bonds, if you like. And in that battle, certainly Roger Moore won that one, actually. You know, slightly outgrossing this one. That being said, after 10 weeks, it had grossed $51 million back in 1983. So, again, working on that double and a half principle, we're looking at a, you know, $120-130 million film. So, it was a pretty big hit. And this added $666,000 to its total this week. So, Bond films, obviously, even back then, had pretty good legs. So. Okay, we're moving on to number 7 now, which is the hippie coming of age thing, The Big Chill, from 1983, which starred. Let me think again. It was Glenn Close, obviously, Tom Berenger, Jeff Goldblum, William Hurt, like Kevin Costner as the corpse. That's right. Like he made his debut. Yeah, again, maybe just generational thing, but, it, I mean, to a 10-year-old, this was a film about old people. You know, it didn't really appeal to me at all, but, let's have a listen to some of the, music over the top here of, Marvin Gaye singing I Heard Through the Grapevine. This is the signature track, if you like, from The Big Chill. I don't have a trailer or anything like that. I figure this would suffice. Everyone's seen those scenes 1,000 times. So yeah, nice playing over the top here. Yeah. Okay. So. So despite my lack of memory for it, The Big Chill was a massive hit. It had been in charge of Netflix and racked up $40 million. So again, we're looking at about $100 million in today's money, and added another $1 million onto that total at the end of the week to come in at number 7. Okay, so next in line, number 6 is A Christmas Story. This is a seminal favourite of the Americans. They love this thing. It gets played every year and all that kind of stuff. Let's have a look at a trailer for A Christmas Story, and we'll come back and talk about it more.
Sunday on TBS, Ralphie can't wait for Christmas. The holiday cheer at jolly old St. Nick. And if Ralphie survives the season, it'll make for quite a Christmas story. 10:35 Eastern, Sunday on TBS.
Yeah, so there we go. A Christmas Story. Bob Clark, obviously the director of another one of my favourite Christmas stories. If you like that being Black Christmas, there's obviously a lot more sugar and sweet and all that kind of stuff. What people really sort of want around Christmas time, if you like. Again, not really a seasonal favourite. Favourite of ours here in Australia, but over in America, led to believe that it's a Christmas favourite. I remember one of the kids that starred in Freddy vs. Jason was one of the young children in the film. But besides that, I really don't know. I haven't seen it even, and it wasn't. It may have been available here on video, but you know, it wasn't the type of thing that was on every year or anything like that. So there you go. That's A Christmas Story coming in at number 6. And after 4 weeks, it racked up $12 million. So you know, not a mega hit by any stretch, but not too bad. And they added another $1,773,000 to that total. One of those sort of seasonal things you bang out there, and imagine it drops after straight after Christmas. But if you can have a few good weeks beforehand, then it's worth putting it out. Okay, number 5 is Yentl. Yep, with Barbara Streisand. That's the one about the Jewish girl that disguises herself as a boy to enter religious training. You might hear the strain in my voice just because this one just had zero appeal to me then, now, and I imagine for the foreseeable future. Even Barbara Streisand fans, I don't know whether they really hold this one in high regard. Then again, I'm completely ignorant on most of her catalogue, to be honest, so I'm probably not the best person to comment on Yentl, but it's one I avoided like the plague back in the day, and continue to. So I can say, as a 40-year-old, I've never seen Yentl, and unless, look, I end up in some nursing home and it's on TV and I am incapacitated and literally staring at the screen, then that will remain the case for the foreseeable future. That being said, Yentl had taken in, there's no official figure actually for how much it had taken in. It had been out 4 weeks, but it added another $3 million to its total for that weekend. So I don't have a trailer for Yentl. I don't want to put myself through it. I don't want to put you guys through it. If I should have found one, let me know. It's just I thought this one has zero appeal to me and to, I imagine, the type of audience that I may attract. So let's give that one a miss, and we'll move on to number 4, which is the first of our first week entries, which was John Carpenter's Christine. Which opened, as we're saying, at number 4 to the tune of $3,408,000. So, about 10 million in today's money. So even by Stephen King standards back then, it probably underperformed slightly, because Stephen King, the adaptations had already had a couple of hits by then, and they were in full swing by 1983. I think Cujo had come out that year, and The Dead Zone, I think, either come out that year or was about to come out. So maybe it was just a case of overload. Maybe just the idea of a sort of possessed car didn't appeal to people as much as the others. But let's have a look at a trailer for Christine.
Stephen King, John Carpenter, two great masters of terror, have teamed up to take you for a ride.
I knew a guy had a car like that once. He killed himself in it.
Christine, based on the best-selling novel by Stephen King, rated R. Now playing at a theater near you.
So what's interesting is, even back in the day, they were touting the Stephen King name and even the John Carpenter name. It was even after the box office failing of the Thing the year previous. Obviously, John Carpenter's name was still somewhat resonant within the zeitgeist back in 1983. So, I'm not sure why didn't do as well as some of the other adaptations, but you'd have to consider that opening to be slightly disappointing. I saw Christine actually at a revival theatre we've got here in Melbourne called the Astor. Those who live in Melbourne will know it. A couple of months back, I took my stepdaughter along, and I mean, she seemed to like it, but she's 21, so she's not really, really young, or certainly as young as I was back when I first saw Christine. She seemed to enjoy it. And I did back then, too. I remember seeing it multiple times and everything, and it's probably not one of my favourite John Carpenter films, but it's not, let's face it, certainly not one of his worst ones either. So, coming at number four on its debut was Christine, so... Okay, moving on to number three, which was Terms of Endearment. Yep, that one, with Shirley MacLaine, Deborah Winger, and Jack Nicholson. And look, not unlike Yentl, it was one of those ones that even back then just had zero appeal to a 10-year-old boy, and one that I've subsequently been able to avoid, and I guess I don't feel any the poorer for it. Look, the film has its fans, obviously, so just not my type of film. I'm not the target demographic. That's what I was trying to get out for something like Terms of Endearment. Sorry. That being said, its total gross up until that stage, it was the third week out for it, and it had done $14 million. So, you know, up around the sort of $45 million range in our money, so was doing quite nicely, and added another $4,245,000 to its total, and added a whole bunch of theatres onto. So the word was spreading, I guess, as films tended to do back then. That being said, I don't have a trailer for Terms of Endearment, for much the same reason as Gentle before, because I just don't want to put myself through it, and neither should I put you guys through it, my dear listeners. So let's move on to number two, which was the second of our debuts, and it is Brian De Palma's Scarface, with Al Pacino. So let's take a listen to a trailer.
Scarface. Everything he saw, he hungered for. Every day he survived was a triumph. Scarface, the will, the power, the passion. Al Pacino is Scarface. He loved the American dream with a vengeance. Rated R.
For information, call 312-644-FILM.
So there you go. That was the trailer for Scarface. One I saw again on VHS, not all that long after it had come out, maybe 84 or 85, so I may have been 12 or so. So I didn't. I don't remember seeing it straight away, or of course theatrically, but. But yeah, that obviously with Brian De Palma directing, Oliver Stone wrote the screenplay with Al Pacino, Michelle Pfeiffer starring. Lots of iconic scenes and all that kind of stuff. And its first weekend, it did $4.5 million. Well, a little bit over, more along the lines of 4.6, I think. Yeah. 4,597,000 upon opening. So a solid opening. It'd be around around the $10 million mark. So not too bad. But not even Al Pacino and his little friend could take on the number one film, which was Clint and his big friend. Let's take a look at the number one movie of the week. I'll get some sort of sound effect or something exciting to signify the number one movie eventually. Again, this podcast is only going to get better. Sudden Impact, a great Dirty Harry movie. It's actually my favourite. It's got the iconic line, go ahead, make my day. Which is often sort of attributed to the first one, but that was the one with, do you feel lucky, punk, kind of thing. This is the one. I mean, and it was fantastic too. Like, as far as it held pace with like a modern action film, where it felt like it could have been, like a Sly movie or a Chuck Norris movie or something along those lines. That it didn't feel out of place. Clint hadn't got so old and out of it that him doing an action film, maybe even by the time the Deadpool came around, but even that's a good movie, but maybe we'll talk about that another weekend. But Sudden Impact took $9 million, But yeah, Sudden Impact number one with $9,688,000. So again, using our thing, $25-30 million opening. Huge opening for a film, like this, a big action film, and really showed the box office draw, if you like, of Clint Eastwood. It was the fourth time around. The last time was the Enforcer, the one with the chick from, Cagney and Lacey or whatever it was, that TV show that was on. I might be wrong about that, but it wasn't that great. So this was a good return to the gritty kind of Dirty Harry film, like Magnum Force was, and the original Dirty Harry. So, yeah, that was another one film of the weekend, and that actually went on to let's have a look at its entire gross, $67 million all up. So again, translated, around the $200 million mark. Sudden Impact was a huge film.
Dirty Harry is at it again.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Clint Eastwood, Dirty Harry, Sudden Impact. Rated R. Now showing. Check newspaper for a theater near you.
That completes the week of December 9th to 11th, 1983. And thanks for listening, guys. I really hope you enjoyed the trip down memory lane as much as I did. We'll do it again. I haven't decided whether we get it weekly or fortnightly as yet. it'll depend on how long it takes to put these things together and that kind of thing. It's kind of an unknown factor. If it doesn't take me all that long, maybe I'll do it. Maybe I'll do it weekly. But eventually, what it might come down to is doing it fortnightly. But for the moment, let's assume that we'll do it weekly, and we'll adjust the schedules. If need be. Now, there's a couple of ways that I can be contacted if you would like to pass on some feedback, good, bad, or indifferent. If you want to tell me, look, the show sucked and I should give it a miss, don't do it again. That's great. As long as I get the feedback, then that's fine. Then I can either work on your constructive criticism or bask in your compliments. So one way or the other, it'd just be nice to hear from a couple of people. So yeah, I actually did download the podcast. And again, if you have some feedback, it'd all be welcomed. Whether it's positive or negative, and the place to get me would be via email. Get me at beforethemultiplex@gmail.com. Really easy one to remember. beforethemultiplex@gmail.com. twitter.com/beforethemulti. I've set up a Twitter there, so some photos and trailers and that kind of thing. Now, you can also search Google Plus for Before the Multiplex. So just go on to Google Plus and a little search thing there and look for Before the Multiplex and add me. And again, that's a place that I post. Where else? So, of course, Podomatic, the place where I'm actually hosting the podcast. That's podomatic.com/beforethemultiplex. So I'll run through those really quickly again. beforethemultiplex@gmail.com via email. Catch me at twitter.com/beforethemulti. At Google Plus, just search Before the Multiplex and catch me there. Or alternatively, go to podomatic.com/beforethemultiplex. And you'll notice there's an absence of a particular social media brand, which I may get to re-enlisting in eventually. But at the moment, no, there is no official Before the Multiplex Facebook page, or no Cameron Parry Facebook page reignited as yet. Those are the ways to get in touch, and that's how we'll close up. Look, thank you very, very much for listening again, and I hope that you'll be with us next time. Go back to a time before the multiplex. It's been Cameron Parry, and I'll see you next time. Well, you'll hear from me next time anyway. Okay, bye guys.